Trim up to 12 by 12 feet for only $299, including paint. Select from a large variety of colors, and rest assured, Jonathan's delivers first-class workmanship. To set your home's refresh appointment, stop by Jonathan's Flooring on North Palafox, just south of 9 Mile Road, or online at jonathansflooring.com.
Hey, this is Dr. Ben McMillan. I do a show on the Pensacola Expert Panel. We talk about your health problems.
Let me educate you about the Activator method of adjusting, which offers a safe and effective alternative to traditional manual adjustments. So whether you've been hurt in a car accident or been suffering from back or neck pain, chiropractic care could be your solution and not just a temporary fix.
Join me this morning on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Hi, this is David Wayne, and I just want to wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
From all of us to all of you, Merry Christmas.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the color standards company Pantone, founder of the Pantone matching system and bringer of order to the universe of design, printing, fashion, and manufacturing through systemic palette categorization and naming protocols. As they have done since the millennium, Pantone each year selects a color of the year to give a sense of identity and guidance to the tone of visual experience and to spark a conversation about the link between color and global culture. They boldly offered their first color of the year, cerulean, in 2000, representing the restful, peaceful, and relaxing color of a serene sky. They followed boldly with fuchsia rose in 2001, a bright, feel-good, passionately feminine, intense pink. Then 2002, true red for love and power, deep and strong. We experienced aqua sky, tiger lily, blue turquoise, sand dollar, chili pepper, blue iris, and then in 2009, a bold choice, mimosa, the sweet color of day drinking. Then followed actual turquoise, honeysuckle, tangerine tango with its heat and energy, emerald, radiant orchid, and all the subversive feminism of 13th wave lesbianism. Then another wine color Marsala, then rose quartz, and serenity shared the throne in 2016, a beautifully blended duality. Then greenery, ultraviolet, living coral, classic blue, followed by another joint nomination for the vivacious illuminating yellow and the equally unvivacious ultimate gray. Then very peri and uplifting periwinkle as the world emerged from COVID-19 pandemic in 2022. Then viva magenta, guiding us into experimentation and self-expression without restraint. The boundless optimism and joy of a world set free. Then peach fuzz and mocha mousse, colors that sequentially hinted at harmony possible in a world of racial variety. Harmony, that is, until this year. Yes, after 25 years of sturdy, helpful, careful stewardship of the important responsibility of global color guidance, Pantone made a terrible mistake for this year, Cloud Dancer. Yes, Cloud Dancer, or have some have noted, well, white.
Pantone just announced their color of the year for 2025, and they chose white. In this political climate, are we being serious right now? If not a dog whistle, why does it look like a dog whistle?
What Pantone called a symbol of calm in a hectic society, others have noted, mostly white women, have noted that it is a thinly veiled racism, taken at face value, claiming that white is calming implies that non-white is risky, unsettling, and dangerous.
It's a political statement. You're going to choose white and market it as a soothing reset? For who, babe? Who is that soothing?
Far from promoting inclusion and diversity, Pantone has now officially stamped 2026 as the Year of Whiteness, a choice that reeks of white supremacy culture.
Pantone choosing white or cloudy days as color of the year is a political statement. Call me too woke, I don't care. I don't think I'm wrong. It is a political statement. It's giving Sydney Sweeney has good genes.
No, babe. There's no such thing as being too woke. And you're absolutely right that nobody wants you to be giving Sydney Sweeney except perhaps your husband. So for truly failing the one obligation of all inclusivity mandates to never include whiteness in your inclusiveness, Pantone, we hereby remove you from the official rainbow of fruit colors. You are scraped off the palette, and we will find someone else to tell us what the global organizing color of the year will be from now on. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, We are once again forced to cancel something President Never Say His Name did. This week, the unnameable one's Department of Health and Human Services performed a vile, atrocious, mean-spirited, and offensive assault on the gender dignity of former Health and Human Services Secretary Admiral Rachel Levine. Yes, anyone walking down the hallway of the seventh floor of the Humphrey Building in Washington, D.C. can peruse the portraits of all former secretaries of HHS. And as you all know so well, dear Othren, Admiral S. Levine was the first openly transgender cabinet member under the presidency of dear Uncle Joe, backrubber-in-chief and good-natured purveyor of unwanted therapeutic massage. In any case, because the Say Not His Name administration denies the existence of transgenderism, Secretary Levine's portrait has now been defaced by placing the name she was given at birth underneath the glass on her official portrait. That's right, they actually printed, and I really hate to say it because of the pain which saying it causes her and us, Richard, on her portrait, but that is what makes this so horrid. We'd been doing such a good job of expunging her former references that both the NPR article on the subject and even her Wikipedia page do not mention her aforementioned dead name on her birth. We have so thoroughly promulgated the most high and holy doctrine of gender anarchy that people are actually afraid of being canceled themselves just for mentioning a dead name. It's vital that we all pretend former named persons never existed. Of course, Caitlyn Jenner won the men's decathlon in 1976, and we never say the name she used at that time because she was actually a woman then, one of the greatest triumphs of a female athlete in history. Of course, Elliot Page, my mistake, don't cancel me, was always a man, even when he was presenting as a woman and being nominated for Best Actress for the role of a pregnant teenager in Juno. He was always really Elliot, which is part of what made the acting such an accomplishment. And Lily and Lana Wachowski were always the Wachowski sisters, even when they were directing the Matrix movies and Cloud Atlas under the false semi-dead name Wachowski Brothers, which we feel very uncomfortable saying. We have been totally winning on the anti-dead naming front, until now. And because our movement has been so effective at erasing the past and denying that Rachel was ever identified male at birth, it was that much more offensive when this malicious graffiti was put over her picture, thus denying her gender identity, doing violence to her personhood, and willfully unrevising our historical revision. And look, the reason this practice is so wrong is that it means there are no limits on who can change anything about the past they disagree with. Just imagine some future female president who is a devout feminist opposes giving women their husbands' names. And so she considers married names to be illegitimate artifacts of patriarchal oppression and as a result decides to change all the names of all the portraits of all the married women in leadership throughout American history, reverting them back to their proper maiden names, as is only right in an egalitarian society that doesn't require women to submerge their identities into that of their husbands. Although we agree, we also disagree. Even when they're wrong for doing so, women should be allowed to control their own names, and so should Admiralette Levine. It is not up to others to resurrect another's dead name, whether gender mistaken or maiden born, and so for this atrocity against human dignity and autonomy, we cancel the Department of Health and Human Services. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Finally, we come to the most important cancellation of the day. Secretary of State Marco Rubio. For his utterly incomprehensible decision to launch the Great Font Wars of 2025. Yes, this week in a memo, Rubio explained that he was reversing the decision by former Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who changed the official typeface of the State Department from Times New Roman to Calibri in order to make documents easier to read for the visually impaired. By opting for a non-serif font, without the small flares that can be distracting to the eye, he was signaling a world of inclusion and comfort, trying to make official government documents more accessible to all. Then, in a horrifying cultural reversion, Rubio wrote in a memo to restore decorum and professionalism to the department's written work products and abolish yet another wasteful DEIA program, the department is returning to Times New Roman as its standard typeface. He added that the previous switch to Calibri has achieved nothing except the degradation of the department's official correspondence, and a State Department spokeshuman further clarified that serif fonts are used by the White House, Supreme Court, and other state and federal government entities and are generally perceived to connote tradition, formality, and ceremony. And thus Times New Roman, with all its flair, has replaced Calibri as the standard typeface of state. But this will not do, dearly beloved Othren. The decision here could not be more stark. This administration is fully rejecting the needs of the proletariat and embracing the aristocratic impulses of the czars. Rubio wants dignity and elegance and formality. Do you not see that serif-based typefaces are the gatekeepers of white supremacy culture? Do you think it's a mistake this typeface was designed by a British man, Victor Lardent, for the Times of London? Not even an American typeface from the man who supposedly wants to make fonts great again. Our president might think of himself as American royalty, but certainly his Secretary of State could have selected a typeface that was at least designed by an American. There were so many good options in non-serif fonts. If not Calibri, the most tofu of all typefaces, thrilling to nobody, tasting to the eye like unflavored bean curd, then perhaps Roboto, when you want to declare a profound lack of personality, empty of anything authentic or human. Or Railway, with all the distinctiveness of a ream of recycled paper. Or Futura, as blocky and brutalist as it sounds. Or Montserrat, an elegant name for a purely boring font. Or Helvetica, the preferred typeface of international socialism since 1957. Any of these would have been fine, for these are the fonts of the future, the fonts of equality, the gray, monotonous fonts of equity without diversity, the triumph of despair, the safe, sturdy gruel of a typeface rendered as uninteresting as the people who use it, a triumph of the common man, prescient of a future where all fonts are equal, but some are more equal than others. So keep your white male aristocracy and all of its serif trappings in a vain and artificial effort to preserve the patriarchy by preserving the serifarchy. Keep your Times New Roman away from our egalitarian society. Keep your Playfair display and your Georgia, your Rockwell and your Merriweather. We don't need no Garamond or Baskerville with all their flair and elegance and formality, their serifier than thou pretentiousness. We humans of the future will rest comfortably in the bland visual functionality of our lifeless Ariels and Tahomas. So no, Mr. Rubio, we reject your effort to revitalize the typeface of tyranny, the eye candy of the oligarchy and its gold-plated excesses. You can have my sans serif fonts when you pry them from my cold, dead keyboarding fingers. We are all sans serif now. Ich bin ein Calibrier. Whose fonts? Our fonts. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
John Pickens has traffic on whatever time it is.
Yeah, whatever time it is. Oh my goodness. Okay. So many font names. Anyway, traffic light out at Airport Boulevard and Davis Highway. They're working on that right now, from what I understand. I-10, I-110 are all flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Ich bin ein Calibrier. David, do you have a quick headline for us?
I sure do. The U.S. announcing new sanctions aimed at Venezuela as tensions continue rising between the two nations. The sanctions involve targeting three nephews of Nicolas Maduro's wife.